world dominated by fear and mass manipulation of the media. Who can you trust? Just when you think there is no hope alive, you find out that there is an alternative news source to turn to. Revere Radio Network, keeping the dream of sovereignty and freedom alive for all. Revere Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in the following broadcast do not necessarily reflect the views of Revere Radio Network, Rob Revere, or any other host on the network. They are the personal thoughts and feelings of the host given the presentation. We support total free speech here at Revere Radio Network, even when it's ugly. Enjoy.
Hey, you're listening to Revere Radio Network. Stay tuned.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Do you understand what I'm talking about? What is our common bond truly? Freedom. Freedom. Without freedom, you can't be a Christian no matter what denomination you belong to. You can't be a Buddhist. You can't own a donut shop. You can't drive from here to Oregon. You can't be an American because that's what it's all about, and it's the only thing that it's all about. Nothing else. Nothing else.
The utmost manifestation of love and devotion to America is today, as it always has been, resistance of tyranny. Resist we must, and resist we will. We will not be silent. We will not obey. We will not wait another moment in fear to stand up for what we know to be right. It is time we start meeting oppression with resistance.
It's about freedom. Only freedom. It means you have to let other people be free.
Okay, we're back for another week. Truth, Love, Freedom Radio Show, Revere Radio Network. I am your host, So Real. And I was supposed to have some special guests on tonight to talk about the Federal Reserve. That is not going to happen. They had to cancel. No big deal. It's just the way things go sometimes. Things get in your way. So, you know, this is going to be my my continuation of the initiation process. I'm going to initiate you into the mystery cult religion. And, you know, I have to set the groundwork first. We're not going to start on the actual ritual, but we're going to go ahead and get into some basic understandings before we get started. Building down some some things that are believed about Freemasonry and about the mystery cults that aren't necessarily true. And trying to prove that to you by using, you know, quotes from the horse's mouth. And I have quite a few books here in front of me, and I'm ready to go through and start quoting. So hang on, and we'll be at it here in just a second.
To those who scare peace-loving people with phantoms of lost liberty, my message is this.
Revere Radio Network Tampa, the worldwide home of free speech.
All right, and this kicks off another week. Today is November 20th, 2008. I'm your host, So Real. And we're going to delve into some topics tonight and about the topics of Freemasonry. And not just Freemasonry. Like I always say, when we're talking about Freemasonry, we're not just talking about the organization of Freemasonry. We're talking about the mystery schools. I'm talking about the Rosicrucians, the Golden Dawn, the Theosophic Society. There's probably at this point hundreds of different orders. The Druids, the Wiccans, all the different people who are involved in black magic and Satanism. They're all part of the mystery school tradition. And though they try to say that they're part of something special or something in particular, the rituals are the same, the lessons are the same, and they just tend to adopt whatever individual god they want to believe in. It doesn't mean that it's different, it just means that it is customized to be toward the focus of which is towards something specific, whether it be paganism, whether it be Wiccan, whether it be the Druidic traditions, and whatnot. So today, we're going to break down some misconceptions about the New World Order and what it is and what the mystery cult's agenda really is. Now, I've said this once before, and I'll say it again. Their tradition, their intentions, the great work that they refer to is the New World Order. But the New World Order is not what you're being taught. The average person teaches that the New World Order is a tyrannical police state of grid-like control over all human beings. And I say, well, yeah, that's not true, though. That's not what the New World Order is to them. And we have to understand, like I say, if you want to know, if you're fighting a battle, you need to know your enemy and you need to know what that person believes. And unfortunately, we don't know our enemies very well because we're getting a lot of misinformation from people who claim to know what's going on. I'm telling you my perspective. Granted, I'm no different than they are. The difference between me and them is I'm going to quote from the horse's mouth and give you perspective, and you're going to have to decide whether or not I'm right. If you decide I'm not, then you can, you know, so be it. No big deal. We'll just move on. You can go on thinking what you want. But if you decide that I am right, then it means that you're going to have to change your tactics. You're going to have to change the way you think about the New World Order and the coming future, and what it means and how to fight it, the method by which you fight it. And it's really difficult for me because I don't like to go around saying you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. But how can I sit there and pretend that I think that they're right? I can't do that. I have to be honest with you. I have to be straightforward. I think that most of them are wrong. I think that they haven't done their research. I think that they scan over these books looking for the word Satan, Lucifer, and anything else they can come across so they can justify their particular belief system and create boogeymen. I'm not into creating boogeymen. I don't think that there's a lot of people in this world that do what they do, even if they're the most evil person you can imagine, do what they do based upon the intention to do evil. It's always based upon the intention to do well, to do good. They think they're doing good. Hitler thought killing the Jews was good. I know some people out there don't believe that happened. That's up to you. I don't really know. That's not even what this show's about. But the point is that everybody has an opinion and about what they do, and everybody always thinks what they're doing is in the best. Rarely do they actually think they do something wrong. So, that being said, let's cut the crap here and let's get right to business. I'm going to start with a quote. This is, now I'm on TV tonight on the Mogulus station. Go to mogulus.com/RRN, Revere Radio Network. I will be broadcasting on that station. You are welcome to go there. I'll try to pay attention to the chat and I'll try to take calls later on. To be perfectly honest with you, I'm not entirely interested in doing that tonight. I'm more interested in just doing a teaching and getting into these topics. Maybe towards the end of the show, I'll take some calls. But as it stands right now, I'm just going to go ahead and do what I'm doing here. Let's start with our first quote from the book, The Secret Destiny of America by Manly P. Hall. And there's a couple interesting quotes in here that I really want you to think about. The Design of Utopias. This is on the 10th chapter.
Sir Thomas More wrote a fable about 400 years ago to set forth the social state of man in a philosophic commonwealth. But so completely has the world missed the entire point that the very word utopia is even today synonymous or a synonym for optimistic but impractical ideals of reform. Campanella, an Italian philosopher, wrote of the major tragedy in that the subject of statesmanship alone had been neglected as practically every other subject had been reduced to a science. Government officials, he insisted, should be elected after examination to determine knowledge and fitness. Boccalini contributed further to utopian literature, and André sought to Christianize it with the theme, "For lack of vision, the people perish." The men who through the centuries had envisioned utopia belong to ages yet unborn, when the principles of natural philosophy will be applied to the problems of government and social dilemmas will be examined for solutions which they are now termed impractical. One of the best known and least read of the world's literary productions is Sir Thomas More's Utopia. It was composed by a man who had suffered greatly from political corruption of his day, 1478 to 1535. Having held high office, More was well acquainted with the machinations commonly shared conspiracies of the state. More would properly be regarded as a Platonist too, for the entire framework for the utopia is borrowed from Plato's Republic. Now, let me say that again. More should properly be regarded as a Platonist too, for the entire framework for the utopia is borrowed from Plato's Republic. Now, I said this before in a podcast, before I was actually doing a live radio show, that the real root of the philosophy of utopianism came from the book Plato's Republic. And the book is permeated throughout the Platonic ideology concerning the ideal state. Under a thinly veiled satire attacking the policies of King Henry VII, here there is another voice calling men... King Henry VIII, sorry. Here then is another voice calling men to the correction of their political vices. Unfortunately, the immediate success of More's book was due to his attack on the king and the government in general, rather than any serious considerations of the remedies which he suggested. In the Utopia, More presents his philosophical and political conviction in the form of a fable, which sets forth the social state of man in a philosophic commonwealth. A philosophic commonwealth. So completely has the world missed the entire point of More attempted to emphasize, that the very word utopia has become a synonym for optimistic but impractical ideals of reform. Sir Thomas More was centuries in advance of his day, which was reason enough why he could not be appreciated. Together with the master Plato, More belongs to ages yet unborn, to the time when men, weary of study of the dilemmas which now they examine by what they think of practical, will turn to solutions which they now term impractical. An important utopian was Tommaso Campanella's 1568-1639, an Italian philosopher also with strong Platonic leanings. Out of the wisdom of his years, Campanella composed the Civitas Solis, the City of the Sun. In this work, he departed from his usual interests, science, mathematics, and religion, to apply the principles of natural philosophy to the problems of government. He regarded it as a major tragedy that men had reduced to science practically every branch of learning except for statesmanship. Let me say that again so you don't miss this. He regarded it a major tragedy that men had reduced to a science practically every branch of learning except statesmanship, which continued to be left to the vagaries of incompetent politicians skilled only in the art of avarice. A major tragedy that science had not been applied to government. Unfortunately, Campanella was not able to free his mind entirely from the pattern of his contemporary world, so his ideals are confused and not entirely consistent. He viewed government as a kind of necessary evil to be endured until each man shall become self-governing in his own right. To the degree that the individual is incapable of the practice of moral virtues, he must be subjected to the laws which protect him from himself. Let me say that again. To the degree that the individual is incapable of the practice of moral virtues, he must be subjected to the laws which protect him from himself and protect others from his unwise actions. Now, if you're just tuning in, you probably don't know what the hell I'm talking about or where I'm going with this. There is a reason I'm reading it in that way. And if you've listened to previous shows, you know why. There is a reason why. And the reason being that I talked about these people look at the average citizen as a primitive, beast-like human being that needs to have people of higher intelligence guiding him. Because we are so primitive, superstitious, and ignorant and fearful that we, as a people that are unenlightened or unevolved, as they are, need to be guided. It's for our own good and protection. It's a consequence of our own actions and our own primitiveness that we must be guided by people who are more intelligent. And I'm going to keep reading because I swear to you, if you keep following with me, by the time I'm done, and it may take a year, but by the time I'm done reading all the quotes I have, and I have a lot of them, you're going to be thoroughly convinced that what I'm saying is true. Okay? Now, people know that these people, I mean, it's pretty much common knowledge that there's this enlightened view of themselves. No doubt. That's true. But, you know, a lot of people try to say that the New World Order is a religious thing. It's a Luciferian thing that they want to unite the whole world under Lucifer, and that they should be, you know, have this some kind of divine power and whatnot. These people have no divine power. They never claim to. The religious mumbo jumbo is to deceive the foolish, the people who they believe are superstitious, and that is you. That is to keep you chasing your tail so that you can't read into the real lessons. They purposely mislead conceited interpreters astray. They use false interpretations of their symbols. But yet you have people all over Patriot Radio and so on teaching on this stuff as if it's a fact. They even get really into their religious mumbo-jumbo themselves as if they know what they're talking about. I don't think I'm enlightened. I just think that I'm another person who read it, but I actually read it. I actually studied. I actually tried to understand what these guys were saying. I didn't draw conclusions and try to get into the intricacies of all the different religious symbols and whatnot. I just listened to the big picture and read through all their books. And this is what I got out of it. Perhaps maybe I am right. Maybe they are right. Maybe there are certain people who are just more enlightened. And if that's the case, then I guess pat on my back, you know. But I really don't think that's true. I just don't. I don't buy into this idea of higher enlightened beings. I just don't. So, I'm going to keep reading on this because I think that it's so fundamental to understanding what is going to occur, because when the New World Order does finally bury its flag in the sand and say, we're here, this is the New World Order, and no, as people have said, I've been listening to people say, the New World Order is here, it is not here. No, it isn't. If you knew what the New World Order is, you could see perfectly clearly that it's not here. Not yet. But it's coming. But when it gets here, I guarantee a lot of these people who, you know, claim to be against it are going to be celebrating. And that's the real issue that I take with what they're teaching. It's not because I'm interested in, you know, trying to pitch a certain belief system. I'm just interested in making sure we have an accurate understanding of what it is. Because if we don't have an accurate understanding of what it is, number one, we're going to lose in the battle. And we are losing. I'm hearing more pro-New World Order propaganda coming out of the mouths of people who claim to be against it now more than I've ever heard. And I guess maybe that's because now I'm finally paying attention. I used to not pay attention, but I am now. And it's not good. It's not good at all. So let me continue. I'm going to go ahead and read that again, so just to make sure you didn't miss it, because it's really, really important. He viewed government as a kind of necessary evil to be endured until each man can become self-governing in his own right, to the degree that the individual is incapable of the practice of moral virtues. He must be subjected to the laws which protect him from himself and protect others from his unwise actions. The principal purpose of life, then, is to release oneself from the dominion of government by the perfection of personal character. The release oneself from the domination of government by the perfection of personal character. Wasn't planning on reading this quote, but I got to do it because I've read it and I'm going to keep reading it over and over and over again to pound it into your head that this is the perspective that these people are coming from. And it's really important to understand this. Coming from The History of Magic by Eliphas Levi, for the people in the camera. There we go. There are two classes of men. There are two classes, free men and slaves. Free men and slaves. Man is born into the bondage of his passions, but he can reach emancipation through intelligence. Between those who are free already and those who as yet are not, there is no equality possible. The part of reason, people who are reasonable, is to rule, and of instinct. Now remember, two classes, free man and slave. Man is born into the bondage of his passions. Passion is a bondage. Why is it a bondage? Because people who evolved don't need the primitive characteristics of things like love and passion and the things of the heart. Now we have the mind. Those are primitive instincts of when man was more of an animal. We needed those in order to survive and live. We don't need them anymore. We have intelligence. Intelligence is supposed to control your emotions. But he can reach emancipation through intelligence. Between those who are free already and those who as yet are not, there is no equality possible. The part of reason is to rule, and of instinct to obey. Now I'm going to go down. I'm just going to skip down to a little bit because I don't want to read all this. Now, those who are in liberation should govern those who are in bondage. Let me repeat that again. Those who are in liberation, the people who are not ruled by passion but are ruled by intelligence, should govern those who are in bondage, the passionate primitive man. And slaves are called to be released. You're called to be released. Not from the government of the free. Now, they're not talking about the government of America, a free land. They're talking about the government of the free, the government of people who have freed themselves from the bonds of passion. The freemen and the slaves. You're the slave, they're the free men. Not to be released from their clutches, not from their control, but from the yoke of brutal passions. As a consequence of which they cannot exist without masters. It's a consequence of your primitive instincts, your primitive characteristic. You cannot be freed from your instincts. Let that sink in. This is how they view it. And I say it's elitist, and that's kind of an understatement. I don't think there's a word to describe the type of elitism that these people see the average citizen with. The disdain they have for the average person. You are not symbolically cattle. In their eyes, you are literally cattle. You are closer to animal than man. Man being the enlightened man, the perfected man. You're not that. You need to be governed, or else all hell will break loose. Hence, order out of chaos. Chaos is the rule of the general society. Order is what's going to come about after that, where man, the primitive man, is going to be brought into order by people who have brought their own passions into order. Let's continue reading The Secret Destiny of America. Okay. In the Utopia, Moore presents his philosophic and political convictions in the form of a fable, which he sets forth a social state of man in a philosophic commonwealth. Now, I already read that. Let me skip down more. Where are we at here? Oh, yes, the science of politics. Unfortunately, Campanella was not able to free his mind entirely of the pattern of his contemporary world, so his ideals are confused and not entirely consistent. He viewed government as a kind of necessary evil to be endured until each man shall become self-governing in his own right. To the degree that the individual is capable of the practice of moral virtues. The practice of moral virtues. What does Freemasonry often claim to teach? Moral virtues. He must be subjected to the laws which protect him from himself and protect others from his unwise actions. The principal purpose of life, then, is to release oneself from the domination of government by the perfection of personal character. Campanella envisioned the perfect state as a kind of communistic commonwealth in which men shared all the properties of the state, receiving more or less according to the merit of each one's action. His theory that the state should control propagation is a little difficult in application, but his advice that all men should receive military training as part of their education would meet present favor. Government officials, he insisted, should be elected by an examination to determine knowledge and fitness, and promotion should be by merit alone without political interference. This view is definitely Platonic and leads naturally to Plato's conception of the philosopher king as the proper ruler over his people. Campanella may have intended his City of the Sun to be a philosophic vision of a proper world government, or may have been setting forth no more than the basis for a new constitution for the city of Naples, which at the time was looking forward to the estate of a free city. It is also said that Campanella, that he lacked the beauty and idealism of the greater Platonists. And while this is probably true, his book is witness to the ills of the of his own time and a reminder to us that that most of the evils he pointed out remain uncorrected. We're going to read his book eventually. Not now, but eventually. In the year 1613, Trajano Boccolini, age 77, was strangled to death in his bed by hired assassins. At least this is one account. We are informed by another historian that he died of colic. A third described his demise as the result of being slugged with sandbags. Anyhow, he died. And it is believed that Trajano's end was due to a book which he published entitled Ragugali di Parnasso, a witty exposition of the foibles of his time. The 77th section of his book is titled A General Reformation of the World. Like the other utopias, Boccanelli made use of a fable to point out political evils and their corrections. Apollo, the god of light and truth, is dismayed by the increasing number of suicides occurring among men. So he appoints a committee composed of the wisest philosophers of all time to examine into the state of the human race. These men bring a detailed account of numerous recommendations to Apollo. Nearly every evil of modern government is included, ranging from protective tariffs to usury and private debt. The final conclusion reached by the committee is that the human problem is unsolvable except through a long process involving suffering and disaster. Does that not give you chills? It should. It gives me chills. You got to understand, guys, this stuff is not new. This idea of problem-action-solution is not new. The Hegelian dialectic is borrowed from previous philosophers. they're just repeating the same philosophies over and over again. And it's good that we're getting into reading on these guys. It's a good thing. But we should be doing some reading on philosophy, because there lies where this ideas come from, where these social engineering concepts come from. The final conclusion reached by the committee is that the human problem is unsolvable, except through a long process involving suffering and disaster. As an immediate remedy, the best that could be done was to regulate the price of cabbages, which seemed to be the only article not defended by an adequate force of public opinion or a large enough lobby in places of power. Boccalini's satire is important because it constituted the first published statement of the Society of the Rosicrucians. It points out, Rosicrucians, we're going to talk about them. I'm going to quote from another book from the Rosicrucians tonight. The Rosicrucians are a part of this too. It's funny because I listen to some Rosicrucians talking about the Freemasons being this evil organization. And it's like, dude, they're the same organization. They're teaching the same thing. It's just a different name. It points out that first, evils must be recognized. Then, the public must be educated to assume its proper responsibility in the correction of these evils. And lastly, public opinion must force the reformation of the state and curb the ambitions of politicians. This was a solemn pronouncement in the opening years of the 17th century. It is little wonder that it cost Boccalini his life. Now, I can go on and on about this, and it's important to. I think I'm going to quote. Yeah, we got one more page. Two more pages, actually. And then I'm going to read some other quotes. I know this is going to go by really quickly, this show, but it's important stuff. And the thing is I could sit here and I could spout out little one-liners that are not in context, and you probably wouldn't get it. And you would think, oh, or you would just agree with me and think that, hey, you know, this is what he believes. That's cool, whatever. That's not my point. My point is to educate you. You must be educated on this stuff. You can't just keep listening to talk show hosts telling you what to believe, or, you know, only listening to people you agree with. And I'm going to tell you right now, I can guarantee that 90% of the people who are teaching on this subject aren't teaching what I'm teaching. And they probably don't like me very much, because they don't like me saying that Freemasons don't worship Lucifer, when forever and a day now they've been saying they do. And that's been the focus of their contention for Freemasonry. They've been going around telling everybody they're Luciferian, they're Luciferian, they're Luciferian. No, they're not. There's plenty of things wrong with Freemasonry. There's lots of things wrong with the New World Order. But most of the things that you hear that are usually wrong are not things that are really wrong about it. And it's that reason that they're going to turn the tables on you by teaching the people these truths, and they're going to make you look like a bunch of damn fools. And it's going to be that reason alone that's going to make people go, okay, I'm going to listen to this guy. These people are idiots. So it's important that we get this shit right. Johann Valentin André, an early 17th century German Lutheran theologian, was the next to cast his lot with the Utopians. Andreas's status is difficult to define, but he was generally believed to be at least the editor of the Great Rosicrucian Manifestos and the author of The Chemical Marriage of the Rosicrucian Christian Rosenkreuz. We may therefore safely assume that he was connected with one of the great Orders of the Quest. Orders of the Quest. We'll be talking about them in the future. Andreas' contribution to the utopian literature is his Christianopolis, or The City of Christ. This work, which is almost unknown to English readers, is largely developed from the ideas of Plotinus. I don't know how to say these Greek and Latin and everything. Oh man, I can't do it very well. I'm too ghetto. I don't even have a good pronunciation with basic English. Plotinus, I guess is how you say it. Plotinus, whatever. Christianopolis is a Plenopolis Christianized. Its author was a quiet scholar with a long white beard and a strict sense of Lutheran propriety. His Christianopolis is a monument of morality and good taste, but beneath his strict orthodoxy, André was a man of broad vision. His city is governed by the wise, and his enriched and is enriched with all the arts and sciences. There is no poverty. The citizens are happy because each is performing his task motivated by an understanding of the dignity of human life. To my mind, it is dignity of values that makes Christianopolis a great book. In order to live wisely, men must have a sense of participation in the present good and future good. There must be a reason for living. There must be a purpose. Understandable to all, vital enough and noble enough to be an object of a common consecration. Andre tells us again and again in the quaint wording of his old book, "For lack of vision, the people perish." It remained for the master of all fable, Sir Francis Bacon, to bind together the vision of the utopias with the supreme artistry. It is the philosophical catastrophe of the Bacon's New Atlantis was left unfinished, or was it left unfinished? Rumor has it that the book was actually completed, but was never published in full form because it told too much. The final sections of Bacon's fable are said to have revealed the entire pattern of the secret societies, which have been working for thousands of years to achieve the ideal commonwealth in the political world. I have examined two old manuscripts relating to the subject and found them most provocative. But it might be less to the point to discuss that which Lord Bacon was compelled to conceal, when there is so much that is unworthy of our consideration in the parts of the work actually published. Now, here's a quote from The Object of the Secret Society, the next chapter, chapter 11, and I'll stop here. One reference to a secret society in Bacon's New Atlantis is scarcely less than the proclamation of a secret society of unknown philosophers, but has gone unnoticed for 300 years. This fable is of the land of Bensalem, meaning Son of Peace, which with its merchandise, the Light of Truth, maintained a trade with Atlantis, which was declared to be the same as America. Everything indicates that it was Sir Francis Bacon's dream that the enlarging of the bounds of human empire should be instituted on our own continent, an area particularly set aside by nature for the perfection of philosophy and the sciences. People, these people are not superstitious. They don't believe in Lucifer, Satan, God, or anything else. And when they use these terms, they do it to deceive you. Please, please listen to what these people are saying. It's so fundamental to understanding what is going on in this world. In The Externalization of the Hierarchy by Alice Bailey, and I've said this before, this is a New Age teacher. The New Age and the people who are involved in it, the New Age is not the same thing as Freemasonry. Although it does take from Freemasonry and the mystery cults, they are the more primitive, exoteric interpretation of the teachings of Freemasonry. They are the ones who took it literally, Blavatsky and the like. And some have even questioned whether or not it was really the people who started the New Age were really not in tune with what was going on with Freemasonry. They may have just been lying. But Freemasonry and the people involved in it have long, and the people involved in this agenda have long known that the people of the world were evolving at too slow a pace to keep up with their vision. So what they did in order to make their vision come about is to create a replacement religion. But they said, hey, we can't replace religion. People are too absorbed in doctrine. It would be difficult to do. So what they decided to do was create a religion that meshes the world religions together. A unification religion, a replacement religion that unifies the existing world, because it's going to be a lot easier to convince people to go along with an evolving religion that's kind of evolving and meshing together than it is to introduce a new one from scratch and expect them to jump aboard. And the new religion is going to take the primitive man, is going to teach him the values that they want to teach him, and get them to live in peace and harmony with the rest of the world and get into their minds this idea of gurus who are supposed to dominate over them because they are more enlightened. And by doing so, they're going to get this utopian society, a great world of peace and security. And what do you hear from the politicians? The New World Order is about peace and security, right? Every time we have a problem, oh, well, if we had a New World Order, we wouldn't have this problem. And they're going to keep saying that until people go, okay, give us the New World Order already. In her book, Externalization of the Hierarchy, Alice Bailey has a step towards the New World Order. Let's read this. I've read it before, but I'm going to read it again. Steps towards the New World Order. In contradiction to a totalitarian world order, what should the rest of the world plan? Now, listen to what she said. In contradiction to a totalitarian world order. So the world that's coming, this New World Order, is not a vision of totalitarianism. At least not on the surface level. Towards what world objectives should democracies work? Utopian schemes, idealistic forms of government, and cultural living processes have ever been the plaything of the human mind down through the centuries. But these utopias have been so far ahead of possibility that their presentation seems useless. They are, most of them, wholly impractical. Certain immediate possibilities and attainable objectives can, however, be worked out. Okay, certain immediate possibilities and attainable objectives can be worked out. Even though the perfect utopia is so far out of their vision for these people, they know it's so far into the future and it cannot be accomplished, but it's what they're working towards. But there is certain things that can be done to help bring it about, and in the meantime, make the world a better place, right? What are they? Given a definite will to good and the patience on the part of humanity. Certain major and spiritual premises should lie back of all efforts to formulate the New World Order. Let me state some of them. 1. The New World Order must meet the immediate need and not be an attempt to satisfy some distant idealistic vision. So basically, their goal is to manage resources and give people what they need. Because as long as everybody has what they need, they'll be happy. So that's what she's talking about there. 2. The New World Order must be appropriate to a world which has passed through a destructive crisis and to a humanity which is badly shattered by the experience. Don't you see how every time there's a disaster, it's New World Order this, New World Order that. And that's where you get this idea. And if people are not going to create the disasters necessary to create the New World Order, they'll do it for us. The New World Order must lay the foundations for a future world order which will be possible only after a time of recovery, of reconstruction, and of rebuilding. So everything's going to have to be torn down. The entire social structure of the world must be torn down. And it will be, starting with America. That's not yet. It's coming in the future, though. And we'll talk about that when we talk about the Federal Reserve next week. Or not next week. Actually, next week's going to be Thanksgiving. I don't even know if I'm doing a show or not. But the next week after that, I'm going to have my two guests here. They're going to be back from the Protest the Fed event, and we're going to be talking to them about the Federal Reserve, the currency, and how it's being used to create a destructive world crisis. And no, this is just birth pains right now. Trust me, it's going to get a lot worse. 4. The New World Order must be founded on the recognition that all men are equal in origin and goal, but that all are in different stages of evolutionary development. So, let me say that again. The New World Order is founded on the recognition that all men are equal in origin and goal, but that all are at different stages of evolutionary development. Where are you in this stage of evolutionary development, by the way? That personal integrity, intelligence, vision, and experience, plus a marked goodwill, should indicate leadership. The domination of the proletariat over the aristocracy and the bourgeoisie, as in Russia, are the domination of an entrenched aristocracy over the proletariat and the middle classes, as has been until lately the case in Great Britain, must disappear. Do you understand? They're saying that the structure of which people are enforcing tyranny upon you to control the average person is, how do I explain it, is not the situation they want. They need the people to at least feel like they have a choice over who becomes leader, that they're endorsing this leader to come and lead them. And they believe in it being a philosopher king type person. Okay? That's the future world order that they're imagining. Now, let's be realistic here. Now, I'm a realist. I don't believe in a lot of the mumbo-jumbo, and I do believe it's a pipe dream, personally, to even think that this could occur. Without there being massive, massive indoctrination and control. And I can tell you right now that they're trying to move things along so quickly that that's pretty much what we're getting. And we're going to get that a lot as we go into the future. Maybe they're talking about way, way in the future that's not going to be that way. But that's the way it's now, and that's the way you're going to see it evolve. It's going to be police state-ish. But we'll get into the police state aspect of it later. But understand that they can go on doing the wars that they do and doing the infringing on the rights of average, everyday citizens because in their own mind, they are doing what's in the best for mankind. They have a distant future vision, and to them, the ends is justifies the means. The ends is what makes the means in order to get there okay. The control of labor by capital or the control of capital by labor must also go. Currency-less society. Sound familiar? Remember my guess I just had from the Venus Project? People say, oh no, they're going to keep the currency system. No, they're not. Wake up to this reality. This is not the way they're going to control you is going to be through technology. In the New World Order, the government governing body in any nation should be composed of those who work the greatest good or the greatest number and who at the same time offer opportunity to all, seeing to it that the individual is left free. Today, the men of vision are achieving recognition, thus making possible a right choice of leaders. It was not possible until this century. This century being, I think, the 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s. It was kind of written over a course of 20 years, I think. Six, the New World Order will be founded on an active sense of responsibility. The rule will be, quote, all for one and one for all, unquote. This attitude among nations will have to be developed. It is not yet present. Seven, the New World Order will not impose a uniform type of government, a synthetic religion, or a system of standardization upon the nations. The sovereign rights of each nation will be recognized. The sovereign rights of each nation will be recognized, and its particular genius, individual trends, and racial qualities will be permitted full expression. In one particular, only should there be an attempt to produce unity, and that will be in the field of education. The New World Order will recognize that the produce of this is eight. Will recognize the produce of the world, the natural resources of the planet, and its riches belong to no one nation, but should be shared by all. Communism. There will be no nations under the category haves and others under the opposite category. A fair and properly organized distribution of wheat, the oil, and the mineral wealth of the world will be developed, based upon the needs of each nation, upon its own internal resources, and the requirements of its people. From each according to his ability, to each according to his need. All this will be worked out in a relation to the whole. 9. In the preparatory period for the New World Order, there will be a steady and regulated disarmament. It will not be optional. So much for freedom, eh? No nation will be permitted to produce and organize any equipment for destructive purposes or to infringe the security of any other nation. One of the first tasks of any future peace conference will be to regulate this matter and gradually see to the disarming of the nations. And that would be it. Utopianism, people. That's what the New World Order is. But there are some, like I said, bad things. But first, let's get into Freemasonry, what they teach, why they believe what they believe. Because you have to get into the roots of the idealism, the philosophy, where it comes from, and why they believe what they believe. So you can understand it. So, this is from a book called The Secret Doctrines of Jesus. It was written by a guy, Spencer Lewis. Dr. Spencer H. Spencer Lewis, who is a member of the Rosicrucian Society. It was put out by the Supreme Grand Lodge of AMORC, which is the Ancient Mystical Order of the Rosicross, the Rosencross, printed and published in San Jose, where their headquarters is. He's put out several books about Jesus and the secrecy, the secret, what he claims is the secret society of Jesus. And in this, he says this. Let's see, where is it at? I think I'm missing it here. Well, I think I mismarked this. Yeah, I think I'm going to have to come back to that in a second, because I think I'm getting ahead of myself here. All right, let's go ahead and talk about... Now, we talked about this earlier, the Republic of Plato. You know what? I'm falling off my wagon here, and I'm starting to lose track of thought. So I'm going to go ahead and go to a break here, just because I'm a little tired from going for a straight hour. So I'm going to give myself a break, maybe a song or two, and then I'll come back and continue where I left off. Enjoy this lovely song.
Global controls will have to be imposed, and a world governing body will be created to enforce them. Crises precipitate change.
Secretly plotting your demise. I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash your whole computer system and revert you to papyrus. I want to make a super virus strong enough to cause blackouts in every single metropolis, cause they don't want to unify us. So fuck it, total anarchy and can't nobody stop us. You see, late in the evening, fucked up on my computer and my mind starts roaming. I create like a heathen. The first cycles of this virus I could send through a modem. Infiltration hit your station. No Microsoft or enhanced DOS will impede. Society thinks they're safe when bingo, hard drive crashes from the rending. A lot of hackers tried viruses before. Vaporize your text like so much whiteout. I want it where file replication is a chore. Lights out, shut down entire White House. I don't want just a bug that could be corrected. I'm erecting immaculate design. Break the nation down section by section. Even to the greatest minds, it's impossible to find. I wanna devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash your whole computer system and revert you to papyrus. I wanna devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash your whole computer system and revert you to papyrus.
I have already planned. The plan is programmed into every one of my thousand robots. We will not hesitate. We will destroy the Homo sapiens.
I wanna develop a super virus. Better by far than an old Y2K. This is 3030, the time of global unification. Break right through they terminals, burn them all. Slaves of silicon, corrupt politicians with leaders and their keywords. FBI and spies stealing bombs. Dissipate their plans in their face and catch the fever. Everybody loot the stores, get your canned goods. Even space stations are having a hard time. Peacekeepers seek to take our manhood, which results in the form of global apartheid. Ghettos are trash dumps with gas pumps, exploded and burnt out since before the Great Union. The last punks walk around like mass monks, ready to manipulate the database or break through them. Human rights come in 100th place. Mass production has always been number one. New Earth has become a repugnant place, so it's time to spread the fear that's fun to some.
Too long have we tried to extend our glorious empire out to the stars. Only to be driven back, back.
I wanna
the virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash the whole computer system and revert you to papyrus. I wanna devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash the whole computer system and revert you to papyrus.
I don't even know what I'm saying. Okay.
Sorry, I had to take a pause there. Get myself together, try to just loosen up a little bit, get it all intense. You're back to the Truth, Love, Freedom Radio Show. I'm So Real, and this is the Revere Radio Network, revereradio.net. Also, check out the new MySpace, myspace.com/Revere Radio. Add us as a friend. Show us some love. Leave a comment. All the good stuff that goes with MySpace. So, can continue on with this topic. Like I said, to set the groundwork for getting into Freemasonry, the first thing we must do is tear down all the misconceptions about it. And there are a lot, unfortunately. A lot of misconceptions. One of the most interesting misconceptions is this idea that they are a religion. Now, I say that the New World Order is based upon a religion. And it's hard for me to get into why I say that until we get through most of what the topics are about. Over the course of probably a year before I think I can actually develop that in my teaching. Because I have to get to the bottom of a lot of what is believed about Freemasonry and what the truth is. Oh, looks like I have a call coming in. I'll go ahead and take that now. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up, man? It's HX. How you doing?
Doing good. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing good, man. I wanted to get call in and tell you that I see you on the stream here, man. Things are looking good. Camera's
awesome.
Moving fast. that MySpace page, dude, you did a great job on that stuff.
Thanks a lot, bro. I really
looks good. Looks good.
Yeah, awesome.
Sure you,
anything I can do to contribute.
Make sure
bro.
You push it. Push it hard. Real good.
Yeah. Indeed. Indeed, bro.
Yeah, but you look good, man. I really appreciate the work that you're doing. I'm probably going to be going on vacation here for about a month, quote unquote. You know, so.
Yeah, I mean.
But yeah, man, hold down the fort, and I'm glad to see that everything is working smoothly for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, definitely,
you're
definitely.
Done, dog.
Yeah, I will, I will. I'll keep pursuing some of the stuff later. All right, man. That's HX, another host here on Revere. And, so let's get back to the subjects at hand. Of course, I'm going to go ahead and welcome anybody to call in whenever they feel like they want to. The number is 1-877-REVERE-0. That's 1-877-738-3730. Feel free to call in. I might be in the middle of something, but I'll go ahead and take your call. And feel free to discuss it. Feel free to disagree with me, you know, about this whole Lucifer thing. I know a lot of people do. But I guarantee if you keep listening, just give me your ear for a while. I'll prove it to you. I really will. I'm going to go through and initiate. I think I might actually start, not next week, because I think it's Thanksgiving. I don't even know if I have a show going on. And if I do a show, it's going to be on the roots of Thanksgiving and the history of Thanksgiving. And then the week after that, we're doing the Federal Reserve, because I have a couple friends coming back from the In the Fed protest. If you don't know about that, please check it out on the revereradio.net. On the front page, it has the event posted there. You can click the link, and it'll take you to some information about it. They're going to have protests at every Federal Reserve Bank across the country to protest it and say they want an end to the Fed. So they're going to come back from that event and give me a heads up on it. I wish I could go this weekend. It's actually this weekend, so you know. But I wish I could go, but I have family coming to visit, so it's not something I'm going to be able to do. If you can make it out there, and you know, maybe you don't know about it yet, who knows? But if you do know about it, I would highly recommend that you participate in this protest. This is the first major protest I think against the Fed that has happened ever since Ron Paul stopped running for president. And I was hoping that things would continue along the path that Ron Paul started without him. Yeah, I was kind of worried about that, but it looks like people are still kind of trying to get it together, and I'm really hoping that there's a big response from the public out there to go out there and protest this corrupt institution of economic enslavement that they have created, and I mean that literally. They have created the institution for the purpose of controlling you, and that's it. That's the only reason it exists, and we'll get into that in the future. But before we go on, let me read something that's kind of off the topic of Freemasonry, and it's the way I'm going to have to take it, and because I'm telling you that this has a political effect. These ideas have an effect on politics today, and in order to understand that, we need to bring politics in every now and again and just confirm that what I'm saying is true. So here I have a book called Between Two Ages. Yeah. It's by Zbigniew Brzezinski. Zbigniew Brzezinski is the person who I understand is going to be foreign policy advisor to Obama, although that may not be true. Either way, he is definitely going to be involved in the Obama campaign. He endorsed Obama. And even if he didn't, it doesn't matter because this guy has major clout and has been affecting foreign policy for years. He's considered a foreign policy guru for the United States. And most of the time, people read his political books. But the book I have here, Between Two Ages, okay, is not a political book. Or it's not his book on politics alone. This book is called Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. It's talking about the onset of technology and the effects that's going to have on the world. And in this book, he has a chapter called The Quest for a Universal Vision. So I'm going to read from that so we can understand if where he's coming from and see if it corresponds with what I'm saying with Freemasonry and the mystery tradition. Man came silently into the world, but though his coming is shrouded in mystery, in the sense that we still know little about the actual beginnings of human existence, from earliest known history man has given evidence of an intense yearning to understand himself and his environment. However crudely and primitively, man has always sought to crystallize some organizing principle that would, by creating order out of chaos, relate him to the universe and help define his place in it. Despite the disappearance in earlier times of entire cultures, human evolution or social development has involved both an expansion of man's awareness of himself and his fellows as a human entity endowed with certain common qualities and an increasingly systematic intellectual effort to define and organize his external reality meaningfully. There has thus been at work what Teilhard de Chardin called an augmentation of consciousness, a stream whereby a continuing and transmittable tradition of reflection is established and allowed to increase, unquote. In terms of the entirety of human existence, the stream may indeed be a short one, as the critics of the notion of historical progress readily point out. Nevertheless, recorded history does provide strong evidence of growth, often halting and uneven, but growth nonetheless, in man's consciousness of common human fate, a certain universal cravings and common moral standard. Even when they compete, religions and ideologies have increasingly done so in terms of and for the sake of principles that seem, when viewed from a historical perspective, more and more to involve semantic and non-substantive differences. This is not to deny the practice that practice has often widely differed. It is, however, remarkable that conflicts have been waged over competitive claims to a superior interpretation and application of such universal values as democracy, welfare, individual dignity, and personal freedom. Next section, the universal religions. The crucial breakthrough in development of human self-awareness on a mass scale came with the great religions, the first universal synthesis that simultaneously expanded man's vision both vertically and horizontally, vertically to define in extended and complex terms man's relationship to a God that was not a small group's alone, but everyone's, horizontally to articulate a series of imperatives that govern man's obligations to man on the grounds that they shared the divine spark. Universalism thus emerged as a state of mind even at a time when man was still provincial and isolated in mutually exclusive social-cultural compartments. Accordingly, the birth of the universal religions represent the appearance of humanity qua humanity, the assertion of man's equality before God in terms of his spirit, his conscience, of his soul, laid the basis for the transcendental importance of the human being and for a much later assertion of the equality of men in their political and social dimensions. In that sense, proselytizing Christianity, which universalized the more limited Greek and Judaic tradition, was a particularly revolutionary force and was viewed as such by established authority, in spite of the distinction it made between equality before God and obedience to Caesar on Caesar's terms. If human history can be said to involve both a struggle and an evolution toward the progressive liberation of man, then the attainment of equality before the supernatural was the first major step on that road. But early man could neither control nor comprehend either himself or his environment. Both were essentially a mystery. A mystery, hence a mystery to tradition. A given to be accepted, whatever the pains of life might be. As a consequence, the distant future became a much more intense object of preoccupation than the immediate present. The inability to cope effectively with disease, plagues, infant mortality, a short lifespan, or natural disasters such as floods and crop blights prompted man to seek refuge in an all-encompassing definitions of his reality. These in turn provided at least partial justification for the view of the view that human endeavor was futile and for the necessity of accepting events with fatalism. By taking refuge in the autonomous, distant, divine future, man relieved himself of his obligations to struggle intensely with the present under circumstances he was neither intellectually nor practically prepared for. Even the notion of free will, a central component of the most activist of the great religions, Christianity, basically involved an inner act of conscience necessary for the state of grace, rather than the point of departure for moral-motivated external action. No stress was placed on the struggle to improve external conditions, because the unstated assumption was that they could not be fundamentally improved. The emphasis was not on inner man, but riveting his attention on the universal and the divine future. Man could master the present by simply ignoring it. Minimum social action was matched by maximum commitment to the supernatural. And it just keeps going on and on. I don't know how much further to go with this. Let's see how much time I got. 30 minutes left. I better cut it close because I have some other things I want to read. Let me just get to this. The other great religions have been more passive, both in practice and in theory. Buddhism does not contain imperatives for social change, but offers salvation from reality. Unlike Christianity, Nirvana did not serve as a springboard for temporal activism. Similarly, Islam, dominant strain of fatalism, has worked against the presence of at least that element of tension between eternal peace and heaven on earth that is so strong in Christianity, and that has prompted its repressed activism. And he goes on in here, and he talks about the different religions and the coming technotronic era, the growth of man outside of religion, and how religion is going to be a thing of the past. And it's going to have to start with what he quotes as saying, getting rid of Islam. Christianity is next. But Islam is the first one because it has a fatalism aspect to it. Interesting, huh? What's going on now with the Middle East? Guarantee you that religion is not going to be welcomed in the new world order unless it's the one that they created. Now, to go on to the next chapter, ideological universalism. And I'm going to read the first chapter and then I'm going to call it quits on this book. But it's important to understand what the future is now that religion's going to be gone and what he thinks about it. That is why Marxism represents a further vital and creative stage in the maturing of man's universal vision. Marxism is simultaneously a victory over the external, active man over the inner, passive man, and a victory of reason over belief. Reason over belief. Some people are reasonable and some are primitive and they're full of beliefs. It stresses man's capacity to shape his material destiny, finite and defined as man's own reality, and it postulates the absolute capacity of man to truly understand his reality as a point of departure for his active endeavors to shape it to a greater extent than any previous mode of political thinking. Marxism puts a premium on the systematic and rigorous examination of material reality and on guides to action derived from that examination. And he goes on and on and on and on and on. And in here he talks about pretty much the reality of the ending of religion of primitive man's control over his own reality, over a philosopher king-style Marxist government ruling over the world that will bring us into a new type of government that has, he says, is probably unseen. It's not really, hasn't happened in the past, but will happen in the future. And then furthermore, he goes on to talk about America's role in that and how what's going to happen to America. And he literally talks about the formulation of a world government. Now, you could say that's a coincidence. Perhaps it is. I don't think it is. You have to understand that these people really do have this hierarchical belief system. Now, let's talk a little bit about the future New World Order and the idea of a police state-style government. Now, because that's the number one, I think, thing that people tend to be against the New World Order about. They're afraid that it's going to be a government that is going to enforce unjust laws on them, or it's going to be a government that controls them or whatnot. And perhaps that's true. But let's understand what they mean by it. What kind of control are they talking about? I mean, I think that people don't understand what the purpose of control is. Like there's these people who believe that there's going to be a police state coming about any second now. And I always say, no, there's not. The only way they're going to start a police state is if the people start uprising against the government. They'll use small police states to handle difficult situations, but they'll never have a full-fledged police state. The only purpose for the prisons that are all over the country is that if the people ever came aware of what's going on and decided to rebel, then they're going to use those. That's what they're for. But I don't think the police state is going to be the final product. It's not going to be what they're going to do. But let's read this from Plato, and I like this quote because it lays out pretty clearly what he believes in terms of the way they can control society. And this is way, way long time ago. Find a friend might remark, but it is a hard role to play. Nothing worth doing is easy, he'll say. But this is the happiness trail that their arguments have blazed for us. We can form gangs and political societies for cover. There are rhetoric professors to teach us mob oratory, mob being the people, oratory, the ways to talk like the mob, and techniques for swaying a jury, deceptive techniques for swaying a jury. So that between force and persuasion, we'll take all that we can get but our punishment. And then later on he goes down here and he says, he replies with cool calculation, initiations and savior gods are very good for that sort of thing, according to our greatest cities and poets, sons and spokesmen of gods. Initiations and savior gods are good for this type of thing, this type of control. The book literally lays out how to control society. The Republic is a vision he has of a philosopher, or basically it starts out as a question. It's what philosophy is all about. It's a question. How do we have true justice? And they go through justice and they talk about, you know, if you're to punish people for doing crimes, do you make them better people or do you make them worse people? They say worse people because you can't beat a horse and expect them to be a better horse. So they talk about the ways of punishment, and they talk about all the different things that create a just society. And eventually what they boil it down to is that in order to create the only way to understand a just society is to create a perfect society and try to understand how man would dwell in that perfect society. So they had to get into what a perfect society is. So basically it starts out on one topic and it goes off on all these tangents around it to get back to the original question, because there's all these things that they have to take into consideration in order to get to the final conclusion. And when they go around and around and around, and they cover so much. They cover that in order to have a perfect society, you have to control the people in it, because you don't want an uprising or people of passion who, you know, that would, what some, like they said, for example, you couldn't have poets and musicians creating music to try to create an emotional rise out of people that would cause them to rebel against the government. So those things would have to be censored, because, and the people would have to be kept totally ignorant of any other concept other than the one that they're trying to produce. And that there would have to be a system of control set up that nobody can see. A secret government. And there would have to be a front government. The ones who were elected, where the people felt like they had control over their leaders. But it would be an illusion. This is all stuff they talked about in this book way back then. And here we are in the so-called Democratic Republic with very much the same system set up. Set up by secret societies who use forms of initiation. Right? the rhetoric professors teaching the rhetoric to the politicians? I mean, coincidence? Maybe so. I don't think it is. Now, okay, I'm sorry, I'm gonna, okay. Now, it talks about secrecy and the purpose of secrecy, okay? People say it's because they have control and they don't want us to know about it. Well, that's not true. And they're not completely secret. They never write out what they believe. They write out the evidence that builds their belief. And the idea is that if you get the concepts, you'll embrace them. If you have the intellectual capacity to understand it, you'll get it. And if you don't, you won't get it. And that's just how it should work. And that initiation process is taking people. The Institute of Freemasonry takes people of the most primitive state. People have the capacity, the good moral character, they say, to understand these ideas and to bring them into a system that helps guide them. So a person needs to come to Freemasonry, knocking at the door, begging for the light, right? They have the blindfold on, and you're knocking at the door of Freemasonry, asking for the light of the lodge. In that state, you are considered a rough ashlar. You are a primitive man. But you're somebody who is above all the rest of the primitive mans, and maybe possible for you to understand the deeper concepts. So the idea of Freemasonry is you come in, you have to proclaim some kind of belief in God, because the idea is to get you out of that belief system. And if you do not have a belief in God, there's no need for you to join. For two reasons. Now, one is that if you're already one of them, you don't need to join Freemasonry. There's no point in it. I mean, you could for fraternal purposes and lie and say you belong to a religion, and a lot of them do. And they rise to the tops pretty quickly and become, but the purpose of Freemasonry is to help bring you out of that primitive illusion of the idea of a supernatural or superstitious God. And in that process, they go through and they teach you lessons step by step by step by step and teach you and give you basically an education on religion and philosophy. And they never say exactly what they believe, but if you read their hints and you listen to the way they say it in a way like they're trying to teach you. They're trying to get you to get it. And you're whether or not you get it is up to you. So the idea is a guide to bring people to that belief system. Now, people who show a capacity to understand the deeper meanings are the ones who rise to the top and become people who are in control of the government. Now, Freemasonry in and of itself, if you could have a prestigious place in business or in the government, it was required at one time for you to be a Freemason. They just did, that it was like the gatekeepers to power. It's not that way so much anymore because these ideas are becoming mainstream. I mean, look at the so-called conspiracy or truth movement or whatever you want to call it, the Patriot Movement. All these people are adopting these occult belief systems. They're talking about the new paradigms and the old paradigms. Break down old paradigms. Let's get to a new paradigm. They all have these interesting utopian visions for the world. You know, they all talk about personal responsibility. Look at the rest of the world like sheep. I mean, that's what I always say. Who more than them are like them, other than conspiracy people? And that's why you have so many Freemasons trying to get involved in it, because they see so much potential in us. And I trust me, they've tried to recruit me several times. They're always trying to recruit me. If I'm so against them, and you would think that they had some secret, they would not want me to join. Well, they don't have a secret. The secret is whether or not you can understand this. The secret is a secret. Okay, let's get into the secret. It is a secret, but it's a secret out of necessity. It's a secret because if they were to walk up to you and lay it out, there is no God. Man has forever sought to understand God and never has, and by doing so have created these religions who have become forms of tyranny and oppression over the progress of man. And since that's the case, we need to abolish that paradigm, create a new paradigm of man being God, man having control of his own destiny, and pursuing a society that is going to help the evolution process speed up so that we can win in the evolutionary process and create this utopian society where there's no more war, there's no more problems with food, there's no more this, no more that. But there's going to be a path to get there. and you need to participate in it and help us. That's the secret. But they're not going to say that to anybody because people will think, first of all, they're nuts. Won't buy into it for a second because they don't come from the philosophic and educational background that these people come from. And since that's the case, there's no point in telling people. I mean, all it's going to do is cause people to know what's going on with you and rise up against you. So the secrecy to them is out of necessity. It's because primitive people are not ready for the truth. And since they're not, hey, we have to keep it a secret. It's the only way for us to perpetuate the belief system in order to protect our ideals, in order to continue our control in guiding society. Hey, it's not only our desire to do so, but it's also a responsibility. It's a responsibility. You understand where I'm coming from? So in this, I'm going to read a Rosicrucian book, The Secret Doctrines of Jesus. And in here, he's going to talk about, to some extent, the necessity for secrecy. Okay. Looking back through history, we find, on scores of occasions dating back into the great antiquity, God has inspired certain wise and select characters to be revelators and or avatars, and to teach and preach such knowledge as would lift the consciousness of man to a higher plane and make his understanding and comprehension broader, and bring him closer to his attunement with the principles of eternal life and truth. Each of these great lights has contributed to the advancement of civilization and to the moral development of man. But the process was slow and lacked efficiency. The increasing population of the world, accompanied by an increasing demoralization influence of a satanic nature, okay, and I'll talk about that in a second, and the rapid deterioration of sound principles that make for stabilizing morality among men and women, necessitate the sending to earth of a savior who would found and organize and maintain a permanent system of guidance and instruction that the world that would reach throughout the world. It is a fundamental truth, as true today as it was 2,000 years ago, that not all of mankind is prepared or ready or qualified in any sense to receive or comprehend and use higher truths of life and the miraculous power that comes from such knowledge. God must have seen, as he must see today, that until the individual becomes worthy spiritually, as well as intellectually and socially, he neither deserves nor can he absorb and properly apply the great truths and make man free and start him on the path of eternal life. This very experience of Jesus is carrying out his mission. Give us excellent reasons for the principle of secrecy. Even among those who are carefully tested and prepared and qualified, there were those who became doubters. See what I'm saying? Some people still go through the initiation process and they still become doubters. Those who sought to use the knowledge and power for personal and selfish purposes and who became spies and enemies as well as traitors to the cause. The persecution as well as the prosecution that came to Jesus point out an excellent reason for the principle of secrecy. While it is true that the mission of Jesus ended early, just as he was reaching the prime of manhood, 33rd age, right? 33rd degree. And while it was true and every conceivable thing was done by the prosecutors and persecutors to destroy the knowledge and power that Jesus had brought to mankind, vestiges of truth and faint elements of the miraculous power he conferred have come down to us through the ages and have been the means of man's gradual redemption. Had it not been for the system of secrecy, had it not been for a secret organization, the careful test and trial of each who had been the guardian of the great mysteries, the great light which came to earth in the first 30 years of the Christian era would have gone out at the time of the ascension of Jesus Christ. And today, the teachings and practices which he made so magnificently real and universally applicable to the needs of man would have been lost, and mankind would have fallen back into errors of the past, and the world would be today without the faintest glimmer of the great light. Now, granted, they have no desire for teaching Christianity. Their purpose is to take what religions are out there and to blend them into their philosophy, and this is a great addition to that. I must say, oftentimes he's justifying the necessity for secrecy because of what happened to Jesus. He was persecuted for his truth. But don't think that for a second that they believe that Christ was a they called the mystical Christ. They believe that he was just one of the great teachers, and that he was misinterpreted, and that Christianity is a perversion of the teachings of Jesus and of the mystery cults. So let's see here. I'm going to read one more quote, and then I'm go ahead and call in if you want to. 1-877-REVERE-0. That's 1-877-738-3730. I'll be happy to take your call. Getting down to the last quote here. Starting to run out of steam. This is a foreword from Secret Teachings of All the Ages. People in the camera there. By Manly P. Hall. The Masonic, Hermetic, Kabbalistic, and Rosicrucian Symbolical Philosophy. Alright. And in the foreword, it was written by Henry L. Drake, Vice President of the Philosophical Research Society. Actually, or was I supposed to read the preface? No, it's the foreword. Okay, listen to what this guy says. Now, you got to understand, the purpose of this is not to tell you the truth, but it's to mask the truth with this religious mumbo-jumbo. Not necessarily mask it, but they're using religion because it's the means by which they're trying to bring you to the higher truth. They're trying to bring you through a process of education. So sometimes it sounds like they're very religious, and they talk religious to try to attract religious people. That's the intention. But the purpose is not to teach you a religion. It's not to be a religion. It's actually to get you out of that paradigm. The religious paradigm, to create a more enlightened person, a humanist. And then, and listen to what he's saying. Try to read into it. It is an honor to have been, associations of men and women bound together by oaths and obligations into esoteric fraternities have descended from the earliest times and bear witness to a natural inclination to perpetuate doctrines which lead to the good of mankind. With the growth of social consciousness, these secret societies became the custodians of the highest cultural concepts. Their initiation rites were symbolic pageantries suitable to inspire veneration for the divine mysteries and admiration for the powers of nature and of God. Powers of nature and of God. They always talk about nature and God together. Most of the mythologies of classical nations were originally rituals of secret societies, and it is a mistake to assume that the earlier cultures accepted as literal the elaborate theology and legendary found in their traditions. So he's saying right there, they don't take it literally. You could say, it's because there's an esoteric meaning. Perhaps that's true. Let's keep reading. Historically, the secret societies were identified with state religions. Basically, knowledge was believed to have been bestowed by the gods in a remote age. The esoteric philosophies have always been taught by means of secret organizations to which candidates were admitted only after appropriate preparation and initiatory rites. These spiritual brotherhoods of scholars, sages, and mystics have flourished among all people, ancient and modern, in all parts of the world. In the program of the mysteries, each individual must grow into a comprehension of truth. Grow into a comprehension of truth. Hence the process of going through the degrees and receiving your education. Before he could be entrusted with the divine powers of mind and will, the divine power being what? The revelation of the truth. Knowing that there is no God and there is no need to be held back by morality and to take your position as your own God and serve in the process of creating the utopian world vision, the great work, or the new world order. Okay, so I just want to clarify. That's what they're talking about here. He must accept knowledge as a responsibility to his creator and his world, rather than as an opportunity for the advancement of personal ambitions. See? Just, that finishes there. Rather than as an... He must accept knowledge as a responsibility to his creator and his world, rather than an opportunity for the advancement of his personal ambitions. The master of the mysteries taught secret practices and disciplines by which the properly qualified disciples could develop the potent abilities latent within the soul and so come into conscious communications with spiritual realities. Okay. Now granted, this comes from the Philosophic Research Society, and it's debatable whether or not they are really in the know. Manly P. Hall has often been attributed to somebody who was in the know and got the higher mysteries, but some people believe that his whole intention, his whole contribution to the great work was to help further the so-called replacement religion of the New Age. and the program of the mysteries, each individual must grow... Wait, I think I said that already. Yeah, okay. Initiates of the philosophical societies came to be regarded as possessing extraordinary faculties and powers. They enjoyed the special favor of divinities, performed miracles, and were worthy of the title Twice Born. For they had come... to a second birth from the womb of the mysteries. These adept philosophers, think about Philo. What did they believe? What did the philosophers believe? Did they believe in gods? Did Plato, Aristotle? Think about that. Were the truly evolved human beings. Most of the arts and sciences which enriched the modern world were discovered, developed, and in many instances perfected by these initiate philosophers and priests. Scholarship was recognized as the pursuit most suitable to the abilities of man. Scholarship was recognized as the pursuit most suitable to the abilities of man. But scholarship was always the means, never the end. The end of the sacred sciences was the abstraction of the human soul from bondage to the senses. Bondage to the senses. And its preparation to receive within itself the light of vast truths. Some men are naturally suited to higher learning, for they possess integrity of motive, the patience of effort, and the vision of ends. These labored towards the soul's improvement and championed enlightened progress above other considerations. Those of different opinion opposed the mystery schools. It was inevitable that the initiates of the mysteries would unite themselves against the forces seeking their extinction. Thus, while the secret doctrine was with its body of disciples functioned more or less openly in ancient society, it later passed almost completely from public view. This circumstance should not be interpreted as a decline of plan or purpose. The esoteric schools remained as a powerful force for the regeneration of human institutions. Those who do not understand the spiritual sciences question their use of unusual symbols, myths, and figures employed to conceal the essential teachings. Let it be remembered that these clouds, put clouds in quotations, were no part of the original doctrine, but were made necessary by intolerance and bigotry. The use of indirect communication, now the intolerance and bigotry, who are they talking about? Think about it. Who, when the mysteries were in the ancient world, what was it that knocked them from the power? Knocked them from being able to practice their open beliefs? Was the onset of Christianity and specifically Catholicism. The use of indirect communication was based entirely upon practical considerations. To remain unknown was the best way to prevent a repetition of the disaster which occurred to the Knights Templar. That's when they were persecuted by who? The Catholic Church and the King. The veils which concealed the arcana of the mysteries were not employed to cover ignorance, but to protect wisdom. And in Europe, it was protected for 1,000 years. The secrets of the mysteries are obviously metaphysical, philosophical, and esoteric, and relate to the processes of taking place within the fields of human psyche during the practice of the spiritual disciplines. Discipleship ends in the attainment of an inner capacity suitable to the realization of an esoteric tradition. The disciples, by expanding consciousness, give the initiate practical mastery over which he learned and constant awareness as to the proper use of higher learning. If these sacred academies imparted only scientific, intellectual, ethical, or cultural doctrines somewhat in advance of their time, they would produce only scholars. The initiates of the esoteric tradition were never regarded merely as brilliant intellectuals. From white-walled Memphis to Rock-hewn Ellora, they were honored as practicing a higher dimension of essential knowledge. History preserves the record of numerous persons living in different times and in various places who have exhibited a knowledge and skill which cannot be explained according to the present standards of erudition. We cannot ignore the testimonies of such learned men as Pythagoras, Buddha, and Plotinus. Many of these noblest members of our race have expressed their profound admiration for the esoteric institutions flourishing in their own times. Not to recognize the esoteric sciences is to disregard most that has contributed to the advancement and the improvement of the human state during the last 5,000 years. There being a divine order of learning superior to the mundane knowledge, and it's available, the time is most appropriate for the further restoration of the sacred tradition. Adeptship is the state of complete spiritual maturity, so far as it is possible to a member of the human family. Deficient in nothing necessary to a life of wisdom, the adept is sufficient to its own needs and capable of determining that course of personal action most likely to contribute to enlightenment. The adepts foreshadow the state of mankind when it will have attained the full release of its faculties and its powers. The adept is therefore the truly evolved of our species. Accordingly, the adepts considered together as the citizens of the invisible empire of philosophic elect, constitute the heroic elder brothers, the custodians and protectors of humanity. As the interpreters of the... this book is huge. As the interpreters of the mysteries, they are the true educators of illuminators. As the redeemed, the servants of divine purpose, they comprise a powerful creative and directive force in the world. The science of life is, therefore, the supreme science, and the art of living the finest of the arts. There have always been true seekers willing to acknowledge the sovereignty of an eternal over the temporal. These have dedicated themselves to the mastery of life and have perpetuated from generation to generation the knowledge and skill they accumulated. This body of essential knowledge is the esoteric tradition. The institutions which perpetuate their traditions are the mystery schools, and the graduates of these schools are the adepts. This volume reveals that the lore and legendary of the world, the scriptures and the sacred books, and the great philosophical system all tell the same story. Human ambition may produce the tyrant. Divine aspiration will produce the adept. This, then, seems to be the significant message of Manly P. Hall's encyclopedic tome. So my sincere wishes... Okay, blah, blah, blah. He basically says sincere wishes to him. So you get mixed messages with stuff like that. And it's because there are certain people on the religious, more primitive, I guess you could say, side of things. Manly P. Hall was considered somebody who explained in plain language that's why they call him the greatest philosopher of Freemasonry. Because he explained in the more common language in a way that's easier for people to understand the teachings of Freemasonry, supposedly, and the Rosicrucians or the mystery schools in general. He is more or less looked at as a guru for the New Age, not necessarily a high-level Mason. Not to Masons, at least. They find his work interesting, but they don't usually attribute to him any authority in Freemasonry other than that, you know, he's the greatest philosopher. I suspect that his entire intention and purpose was to perpetuate a belief system, the replacement religion. And a lot of times, he does a lot of comparative religion stuff where he tries to say that they all originate with the mystery cults, and he tries to talk about the restoration of the mystery tradition, and so on. So I don't really think that if you're reading Manly P. Hall, you're going to get really the in-depth knowledge that you would get from somebody, say, like Albert Pike or Mackey or any of the other ones. I have a number of other books up there, especially Blavatsky, the whole New Age movement, this idea that there's going to be a new age of enlightenment coming, all goes along with their intentions and desires. But their intentions and desires are based upon humanistic and philosophic concepts, while on the other side you have these people who are reading these concepts, because it's not being spelled out for them, they're taking it at face value, which I laugh at, because from the Freemasons that I've talked to who would agree that I'm right on this stuff, and I've had a few actually do that, they admit, you know, these people, you know, it's funny to them because it's exactly not what they're about. It's like it shows their primitiveness. Like, nothing is more obviously shows your primitiveness than for them to write a series of lessons for you to go through so that you can demonstrate your ability to understand the deeper concept and come out of it enlightened, than for somebody to take it at face value and not get the bigger picture. I mean, it's funny to them. They find it very funny, actually. And you know, and they don't like when they're being compared. And if you talk to Freemasons, they're not even comparable. Freemasons will dust the floor with some of these people, unless they were people like Menly P. Hall, which I gotta say I'm suspect of them. There's no way for me to prove it's just an observation. And of what I understand. Now, granted, I could be wrong. And if you have information, just say, hey, you're wrong about this. Please share it with me. My email is admin@truthlovefreedom.org. I'm open to being wrong. I want to be corrected if I'm wrong. But from my studies, and I can tell you right now, the only person I ever listened to that had any idea about this stuff was William Cooper. And as far as I'm concerned, the people who are teaching on the subject today are a joke. Most of the people I listen to are a joke. And William Cooper was the only one that really got it, it seemed like. And he even believed, to some extent, that they worship Lucifer, and I don't even believe that. And, you know, of course, I didn't learn from him, per se. I read his book, and he opened me up to it, and that's what got me started in my research. It wasn't until years later, after reading Freemasonry extensively, and my wife was part of the New Age movement, and I started investigating that and seeing the connections there and understanding what was going on. Talking to several Freemasons also helped. That I come to the realization of what was going on, and then I got access to his Mystery Babylon series, and I got to listen to it, and I was blown away because he had figured out a lot of what I had figured out. Now, I said some people may believe that the Freemasons are actually a religion; they believe in religious concepts. I don't think so, and I think that if you listen to what they're saying, they say it over and over and over again, but they're around the bush about it, because they're not trying to tell you straight up what they believe. They're trying to see if you get it. You got to read between the lines. And what they're trying to say is that there is no God. And since there is no God, there's no need for morality. There's only need for morals in the sense that it can perpetuate the race of humanity and continue our progress towards evolution. Becoming higher entities, our evolution from a beast-like thing, an animal, if you will, to a more higher consciousness being. That there's literally no limit to us as long as we can use our minds to create the world and that we want, you know, technology that we want. And technology is going to be the new world order. They don't need to put cameras up everywhere. They got cameras on your phone. You got cameras on your computer. Yes, they can already turn them on and listen to you. They're just getting everything set up. People have these boogeyman ideas, and I hate to say it, but I think that a lot of the people who are teaching that the New World Order is this horrible police state are going to end up being pro-New World Order people when it comes about. I would have even ventured to guess that this revolution that they have planned is going to be a revolution where people like us are involved in it, and we think that we're actually overthrowing the actual institutional powers, when in reality, that's exactly what they're trying to create, and we're just doing it for them. Think we're being tricked, people. I really do. I would encourage you to do your research. Don't take my word for it. I quote every single book. I tell you the titles of all of them. And if you don't know what they are, get in touch with me and I'll give them to you. And you can go down and rent them, buy them. They're on eBay. You know? And you can even go to this Scribd. I think it's Scribd, Scribd.com. Almost every book that I have is on there. Almost. So I would encourage you to go and read up. And do some research. And I mean real research. Take into consideration what I'm saying, and see if you find out that it's true. So that's it for my show. I'm signing out. Please tune in next week. Maybe not next week. It's going to be Thanksgiving. Keep it on my website. I'll post something on truthlovefreedom.org, letting you know if I'm going to be doing another show. We'll see. I don't even know if it's going to happen. If not, it'll be the week after that, where I'm going to have a couple special guests. We'll talk about the Federal Reserve, and then we're going to get back into this whole Freemasonry thing. So, peace and love. Bye.